Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Democracy by Petition, Popular Politics in Transformation, 1790 to 1870, by Daniel Carpenter, narrated by Eric Michael Summerer. Publisher's note: in this audio edition, you will hear references to figures and tables present in the print and ebook formats of the book. Preface. Democracy and petition are concepts that seem, at first glance, utterly unfit for each other. Democracy proclaims the people as sovereign, its constituent citizens as equals. Those who rule in a representative democracy do so by holding offices to which citizens alone elect them, or, for many administrators and judges, by having been appointed by the elected. Democratic government derives its authority from laws passed by those elected officials. Petitioning, on the other hand, evokes a humble approach on bended knee to a ruler, in the pre-modern notion, a monarch, asking for something only the sovereign can grant. So conceived, the petition seems to presume a form of abasement, the supplicant rendered as subject, every aspiration converted into a meek request whose fulfillment is a matter of the ruler's whim. For much of a century, though, petitioning and democracy ran together as never before and never since. In 19th century North America, petitioning became truly explosive and starkly radical. It became more democratic in its aspirations, its proliferating masses of signatures, and its connection of one petition to another in the architecture of a campaign. Petitioning had broken from the monarchical model of supplication before, especially during the American Revolution, but never with such audacity or scale. Few corners of the continent's far-flung populations appear to have been untouched by this revolution. From indigenous villages in the St. Lawrence Valley and from pueblos in Nuevo Mexico, from women and men of color in Barbados and Trinidad, and from black communities in Boston, New York, and Philadelphia, from tenant farmers and from urban artisans, from politicians like Thomas Jefferson, Henry Clay, Louis-Joseph Papineau, and William Lyon Mackenzie, from 8-year-old boys and 12-year-old female canvassers, and from aging widows who wanted to vote. From these and from thousands of other authors, both individual and collective, new petitions surged. The democracy portrayed here is not our mother's democracy or our father's democracy or our own. Yet it might well have been our ancestors' democracy, albeit a partial one, some 5 to 10 generations back. It is a democracy in a different imaginary. The story of American democratization we have been taught is not false. It is one of revolutions, assemblies, and legislatures, the torturous evolution of voting rights for men, for African Americans, and for women, the organization of mass parties, the abolition of slavery, and the enshrining of civil equality in constitutional text. An appreciation of petitioning, however, deepens and changes this story in important ways. First, crucial dimensions of democratization, the expansion of suffrage rights, the empowering of representative bodies, the freeing of lands from feudal tenure, the abolition of slavery, and the expansion of civil rights and preliminary equality, depended as much on petitioning campaigns as on voting and parties themselves. In these developments, petitioning shifted agendas and coordinated popular pressure. Petitions helped bring us the hallmarks of the democracy we know. Second, much of the development of organized civil society in North America, the fundaments of the democracy that Alexis de Tocqueville saw and admired in voluntary associations, happened by petition. In a virtuous cycle, petitioning campaigns were often sponsored by organizations, which themselves may have been started by petitions for incorporation or of protest. Time and again in the antebellum period, petitioning campaigns left organizational legacies, including the building blocks of new political parties that were far larger and more capacious than the groups that had initially sponsored them. Third, The petitioning authors of democratization encompass peoples and places different from those centered in customary narratives. These different peoples include not only American free black communities, but also women and men of color in the British West Indies, whose activity alarmed slaveholding interests in the American South. The different peoples include thousands of petitioning indigenous women and men who reshaped legislative and bureaucratic agendas from Canada through Massachusetts and New York to the Great Lakes to Mexico and the Pacific Coast. The different peoples include women who revolutionized the petition canvas and seeded many thousands of deliberative conversations on indigenous dispossession, slavery, war and imperialism, temperance, and the rights of their sex. The different peoples of this story also inhabited different spaces, including those outside the boundaries and sovereignties of the United States. They include French Canadians, who deposed a powerful colonial governor and whose activity inspired the English Chartists, American settlers in what is now Ontario, alliances of Pueblo natives, Henizaros and Hispanos in Nuevo Mexico, Catholic women during Mexico's La Reforma, men and women of color in the Caribbean, and women and men in indigenous villages across the continent. Finally, a more democratic reading of petitions, interpreting them as alliances and organizations emergent on paper, permits a rereading of the role of those who have figured centrally in existing stories of democratization. Henry Clay, Louis-Joseph Papineau, and Robert Gourlay built the fundaments of opposition parties in part through petitioning campaigns. The views of leaders ranging from Thomas Jefferson to Abraham Lincoln were shaped and reshaped by democratic petitioning campaigns. William Lloyd Garrison, Angelina Grimke, Maria Stewart, and many others harnessed petitioning to build a multiracial coalition behind the immediate abolition of slavery. City artisans and distant farmers united in signing for tariff protection and anti-monopoly initiatives. The petitioning campaigns of black and indigenous peoples were highly successful, in part because they successfully courted white allies. The inseparability of petitioning and democratization forms the central work of this study. Unpacking that claim necessitates thinking of democracy not only as institutions of voting and parties, but also as a work of agendas, of dialogue between government and citizen, of civic organizations, and of cultural transformation. It also requires a modernization in how we regard the petition, as only in part the supplication of yesteryear, but also a modern technology of text and testimony. Introduction. 1. Signature Moments, 1846 to 1849. In the powerful words of an enduring language, on April 8, 1847, at the Moon of the Geese, on the northern shore of the great seaward flow of North America's Dawnland, did the chiefs Rui Paku, Pat Shadus, Shapatitz Altiru, Misher Ashine, Rue Minik, Arapik Mistakutiae, and 125 other men of the Innu Nation address the Governor General of Canada. O great chief who we call the captain of the ship of state, they wrote, we, the Indians of Tadoussac, of the Ile de Jeremie, of the Godbout River, and of Sept-Îles, salute you respectfully. The Innu had come to the governor with complaints and requests. They began to make their case. For a long time now, the province has derived its annual revenues from our lands, by the commercial posts as much as by woodcutting, and thereby our hunting grounds have vanished in conversion to farming, and still we have received absolutely no compensation. Thus, we are thrown back into the forests. Soon we will not even have a river in which to cast our nets. We will vanish like the sand carried by the wind if you do not take up our cause. We have learned that new settlers are coming to stay on our productive lands. If you want us to be able to live, we are going to let you know what we think. That you reserve to us the land stretching from the Outard River, including its two banks, all the way to the Betsiamis River, including its two banks as well. that you leave us with exclusive rights to fish in the Utard River and the Papinashua and the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?